Wednesday mornings on CITR from 8 to 10 a.m., it's the Suburban Jungle Show with your radio host, DJ Jack Velvet. Thrills, chills, excitement, and music. That's the Suburban Jungle Show, Wednesday mornings from 8 to 10 on 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You can also catch this show, streaming and podcast, at www.jackvelvet.net. Don't miss the Suburban Jungle Show. Wednesdays, 8 to 10, 101.9 FM, CITR.
I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello, welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio Canada, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And today we have a special return guest. We're going to be speaking with Patricia Indigo Irwin, and she was on the show last year, and she was speaking about her book, The Wave Riders, and she was also a teacher in my coaching program at Erickson College. She's a coach. She's an author of multiple books. She's also a speaker, and she is here today to talk with us about what's going on and coaching and NLP, so we're just going to jump right into it. Welcome back to the show, Patricia.
Well, thank you, Marie. It's always wonderful to hear your voice again.
Yay! I'm so
and you had
excited.
Me dancing, you know, between the music and the drums. I was dancing in my room here.
Awesome. Awesome. So what is new with you since you were on? You were on a little bit after Thanksgiving last year. So what's been going on for you since then?
Well, it's always an ever-changing world, isn't it? You know, and I think when your heart's open, you look for opportunities to help anywhere. And something that sort of stumbled into my lap was I'm still training at the college for coaching. And, you know, as I'm training, you're always learning more and more every time that you either teach or sometimes I sit in as a teaching assistant. And I learn from every student that's there, of course. You know, they bring stories and different shares that they do around the globe, you know, 30, now I think 40 plus countries. So it's really amazing. But also life coaching, as you know, falls into so many areas. And what happened to me was I've always been a dog trainer, you know, as a hobbyist competitor in stock dog trials with border collies. I've been a dog trainer sort of all my life, had a passion for dogs, and recently started helping to train service dogs, matching homeless dogs with veterans and first responders who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. And the beauty of that is it naturally brings together the skills of life coaching and transition coaching and dog training all in one and helping homeless pets.
Wow. Well, I'd love to hear more about that. PTSD is a major issue for so many people. So what do these dogs do? How do they help people heal?
Well, you know, what we do is, first of all, of course, there's a standard obedience that we have to get them through because they have to be extremely well-behaved dogs. But when it comes down to the individual, it might be that they're still having nightmares, for example. And so as they're having the nightmares, they're reliving the entire experience. And so the dog will sense that and may do multiple things. It might just go up and nudge its nose, you know, either under the hand of the vet, for example, or some like them to jump in the bed, but, you know, whatever they want, that really helps them. So it nudges the nose, and then that sort of wakes them from, or nudges the hand, wakes them from the nightmare, and then they stay right by the bed until the vet says, you know, go to your bed or something. And then that way they have, you know, it's just like this comforting friend beside you. And it really helps. It also helps when a lot of times when you have post-traumatic stress, it's sort of a lot of anxiety in there. And going back in the community at all, you know, going to a busy place, they're always sort of looking around for safety, checking things out. When they have the dog sort of helps them to keep a little bit of space around them and helps them, again, to have that companionship to go, you know, into stores and restaurants where and malls where they may never have gone before.
Wow. So how long do you work with the dogs before they're ready to serve?
Well, it could be a long time. You know, it could be, let's say on average, maybe even a year. It can be shorter than that if it's a dog that's maybe had a lot of training that we find, that's maybe 2 or 3 years old, has had a lot of the obedience training, and then we only need to, help it get certified with a certain person. So the dog and the people get certified together. It's a partnership.
Wow. Aw, that's so exciting.
Isn't it fun? And, you know, so life coaching has really come in handy with that, too, because, of course, it allows me to know not to ask questions, for example, that might make them relive the experience. Because in coaching, we know that that only digs that old neural pathway deeper in the brain. And what we want to do is dig a whole new path, you know, to a whole new world and experience.
Awesome. Well, that was what I was wanting to actually talk about today, because I'm really big on this whole neuroplasticity thing and NLP, and I want to find more about that. But is there a website if people want to get involved or donate or anything for this, the homeless dogs?
Absolutely. And, you know, the beautiful thing about the people I'm working with is that a lot of these organizations actually charge the vets and the first responders. This organization does not. It raises funds only, so lives off donations completely, and does not charge the vets, which is absolutely wonderful. So it is Citadel, Citadel Canine.com. So it's Citadel Canine Society. And they're located in Vancouver, actually. But we do, we help across Canada, so it's great.
Wonderful. So citadelcanine.com. And
right.
It's the Citadel Canine Society. Wonderful. Oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy to know that you're doing that. And I love that it just kind of ties into building new neural pathways. So let's talk. Is there anything more you want to say about the dogs?
Well, I guess I just, you know, it's nice now that people are starting to learn that there are different types of guide dogs, right, or service dogs. These are emotional support dogs who are also helping with things with depression, bipolar disorder, manic states, all of those things. So emotional support dogs have really been proven to help.
Wonderful. Now the next thing that needs to be done is there ideally could be new legislation that allows people to have dogs if they're renting.
Absolutely.
Because
and technically, technically certified dogs should be allowed. So should be allowed already. It's just really getting people to, you know, to understand more why these dogs, they don't see someone who's blind or in a wheelchair, right? You know, that there are these type of dogs and that they have, a right to be there as well. You know, because we go through a long, long certification process. And so the dogs are, you know, they're not going to be the type of misbehaving dog anyway. So that's going to really help too.
Mm-hmm.
And a service dog, emotional support dog, service dog, can be small,
mm-hmm.
right? Doesn't have to be a German Shepherd. We have, of course, work with German Shepherds, but could be a small dog because that still gives emotional support.
Wonderful. So yep. It's citadelcanine.com. And yeah, because with the work that I do with the suicide prevention hotline, some of the time we'll ask if someone's calling in and they've been suicidal and we say, so what's been keeping you alive? What helps you to get up every morning? And so many times people say it's because of a pet. It's really sometimes the only thing keeping someone alive and giving them a reason to live is that the pet is reliant on them.
Absolutely. And the pet can be trained to nudge them to get out of bed and take me on a walk, you know, or to bring me my water or, you know, whatever it is. We can, you know, dogs are so amazing what they can do for us.
Mm-hmm.
Just just give us a hug is a big one sometimes too, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing I love most about dogs is they're always happy to see you.
Yeah.
It seems like they're smiling.
You know, there's an old joke on that, right? Just because your dog thinks you're wonderful doesn't necessarily make it so.
But the dogs see the wonderful full parts in you. So
yeah, they do. Yeah. They do. They let us know how great we are, no matter what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Aw, that's so wonderful. Okay, again, so that's citadelcanine.com. Well, I'd love to talk more about NLP and building new neural pathways. So if you're open to talking about that, I have an idea of what NLP is, but I'd really love to understand it much more deeply. So can you tell us a little bit about your training in NLP?
So I have my master's NLP practitioner certification. So, and I've completed that through Erickson College in Vancouver, international college, of course, available throughout the world. but I did mine in Vancouver, and I did both my practitioner, which is level one, and the master's with Erickson in Vancouver. And what I found is wonderful about NLP is that we can so quickly change the way that we feel or experience a situation by changing some of the specific parts of that situation. Let's say in our mind, let me give you an example, and it's called NLP, by the way, is neuro-linguistic programming. It's been around for a long time, and it had a bit of a bad rap because some people were maybe, you know, abusing it for sales techniques and things like that, but neuro-linguistic programming itself is a beautiful study of how our brain and our languaging and our habit patterns work together. In coaching, we bring some of those elements in. In the NLP-specific sort of training, coaching, for example, is not leading. We allow the clients, peer coaching as the ICF calls it, we allow the clients to steer the boat, as it was. And in NLP, what we're doing instead is actually saying, the person says, you know, for example, I started to watch the show Merlin. I don't know if you've ever seen
that show.
Well,
I love that show. I do.
But I love Arthur and the Round Table. You know, the good always wins. You know, all stuff. Some awesome special effects. And so I started to watch this Merlin show and almost became addicted to it. You know, it was a bizarre thing. If I didn't watch that show, I'd start to feel like, you know, I hate to say it, some of my friends were waiting for me. I thought, oh, my God, this is getting to be too much, right? So we did a little technique. We do a technique where we see the show in our mind. And so, of course, I see it, you know, there's color. There's red capes and it's you know, there's noise and there's camaraderie and all this stuff going on. And so in NLP, we detail what are the elements that are in there. Okay, you said brightness. And a technique we might use, if we take away the brightness and we make it now black and white, does that show still appeal to you? Yes or no, right? So we look through a variety of things to find the actual triggers to that feeling or that's linked into our brain. And when we take it away, often we find it's gone. It's just totally gone. So we visualize it for a moment in black and white, and the next thing you know, I have no desire to watch that show. That took place all in about 5 minutes.
So what if you're not, because this is one of the challenges I've had, is what if you're not an especially visual person? If someone says, can you picture it in black and white? I mean, I can imagine what that might feel like or get a sense of it, but I don't actually see an image in my mind's eye.
And each of us have, so that's an awesome question, because each of us have basically different representational systems, right? So we have our visual system where, you know, we can see and we might see colors and we instantly see our scenes. And then we also have an auditory system where we hear things. You know, we hear our mother calling us for dinner, or we hear the boss got mad at us in a certain tone, or we have inner dialogue, which we hear as well. The other one, mainly that we use, the three, there's more, but the third one is the feeling system, kinesthetic we call it. And in the feeling system, we can get a lot of detail through the feeling system as well. You know, what are you feeling? Where are you feeling it? What if we move that feeling? What if that feeling feels warm and now it's cold? So we can change triggers in the feeling representational system as well. And we also have the olfactory, I always get tongue-tied on that one, and the gustatory, so taste and smell senses that some people might. So we be more familiar with. So we try to deepen the experience. So what happens is that we generally ask, first of all, to, you know, just explain to us what that experience is like. And we might hear someone say, for example, if you're not really a visual person, now we all have all of them available. However, we have some that we're just more comfortable to stepping into initially. So a person who might start with, you know, oh, I feel it, then we know that they're more comfortable in that feeling representational system. So we ask more questions around that area where they're comfortable. Where do you feel it, you know? Is the feeling small or is it large? Is it inside or outside of you? And once they've started to roll with the feeling, then you can bring in some of the other things, like, you know, what might you be hearing right now? And even silence is hearing something, right? It's hearing silence. So what if we made it noisy? Is that still there? Right? And so we go through, and then we can bring in the visual and say, because, you know, we can enhance our visual abilities even by, for example, you know, can you imagine your car right now? You know, where did you park it? And then working with some visual visualizations that are easier, you know, what's your front door look like? What does your chair look like you're sitting in? Did that answer your question there, Marie?
I think so. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And it's interesting because if someone says, imagine, like when you said, imagine where your car is parked, I mean, there's a little bit of a visual there. However, like I'm sort of spatially seeing it, right? But if you say visualize or tell me what this looks like, automatically I'm like, I can't see it.
So true. So true that the words, and that's so interesting because it's the words that we use when we talk to people, whether it's in coaching or NLP, that can close the door or open the door. You know, for example, we work with powerful questioning, which is open-ended questions rather than closed questions. Same thing, right? So if we were to say, Maria, can you visualize, right? You might say no. But if I was to say to you, imagine just for a moment, Marie, imagine, sorry if I call you Maria, by the way, because I have a dear friend named Maria, and because you're close to my heart, it comes out as Maria sometimes. Uh-huh. if we were to say to you, now imagine for a moment, Marie, if you were now to just take a moment and imagine what it would be like to tomorrow wake up and have exactly what you want. So we've left that really neutral. And just share with me when you're ready, what do you experience there? When we do that, those are all open, you know, open-ended questions. What do you experience? What do you notice? And so that allows people to explore in their own way. And that, too, I think is what you love about coaching, too, right, is those powerful, beautiful questions and then that open space that allows us to think, which we rarely get in a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it opens the mind to possibilities that you never maybe even considered before.
You know, it's interesting that Ray Choice, who was used to be a trainer at Ericsson and started a lot of the programs, worked in the Olympics one year. And she brought to us this notice that she had. She says, you know what? No one makes it to the Olympics without a coach. And isn't it interesting that we think that we need to make it through our entire life by ourselves without necessarily having someone say, you know, what is it that you want in your life? You know, how might you get started with that? What's next for you? You know, I have this funny little visualization. What if we were all born with coaches, you know, life transition coaches, and we could switch them out if we needed to or wanted to? But, you know, imagine what your life would be like today had you been born with a coach whose only interest was to listen fully to you, to ask you powerful questions, to ask you questions that might help you stay on track. You know, what might get you in your way, Marie? What might be something that you can plan to get around that? You know, can you imagine what your life would be like today had you had that from day one?
It's interesting because Shefali Sabari, Dr. Shefali Sabari, the author of The Conscious Parent. That's sort of the relationship that she's trying to encourage parents to create with their children, is to be one of guidance rather than punishing and all of that, is to connect. And I'm asking those kinds of questions to kids would be, I mean, do you ever work with kids?
You know, I wrote a children's book. I'm not sure if I told you that before, but I wrote a children's book called Teach Me to Breathe. I don't work directly too much with kids, but I had been working with adults, as you know, for a lot around creativity and balance. So to me, creativity means anybody, right, that can have a creative thought. So creative idea thinkers who ride adrenaline and go too far sometimes fall into depression. So they might be diagnosed as bipolar. They may not even notice that they have these waves that they ride. So for years I was working with people who ride these waves and helping them understand themselves, helping them to learn that to balance up, not use up all of their adrenaline stores. And what I realized is that when we're on it, you know, like we are really, really doing well, you know, we're thinking well, our business is going well, everything's gelling, right? We're doing well. Very hard to reach anybody and say, yes, and are you balancing? Are you getting rest for yourself? Are you taking a brain break? You know, we don't want to hear when we're in that state. And then we fall, instead of falling a little bit lower on the wave into a middle wave where we can say, you know, keep going and being creative, we fall, plummet all the way down into the deepest depths of depression. And now all of a sudden we've got an opposite brain, right? We've got a brain that says, I'm no good. I can't create. I can't talk. I can't do anything. So when we're in the lowest depths, people won't listen either, right? So, I mean, I wouldn't either. You know, if I'm feeling down, man, last thing I want to do is hear somebody say, you know, well, let's next time think about the balance, or, you know, we just don't want to listen. So I thought, wow, what if I could reach children? What if I could start a series, and actually I've just done the one so far, of children's books based on the theories of coaching that we use as adults. And the first one was called Teach Me to Breathe, and that website is teachmetobreathe.com too if you want to look at it. It's about teaching children to teach a goldfish to breathe properly, to slow down his energy when he's playing too hard, when he's getting grumpy, when he can't go to sleep and he's jumping on the bed. We go, no, 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 Jay, try breathing instead. And so the children actually read through the breathing, you know, breathe it in for four counts, that type of thing. And then, so they're sharing that. And children, I was just, you know, goosebumps right up my spine when a parent told me that her children started to teach each other about breathing techniques in kindergarten. I was just astounded, right, that they were carrying this book around. So, no, you know what, this is what we should do instead. And I thought, oh, my God, I saw the ripple start, right? Can you imagine an entire generation who knows how to use breathing to lower our adrenaline, to balance? I thought, oh, wow. So it's the first in a series that I was, that I have in my mind.
Awesome. Yeah, I see on your website, actually, so patriciaindigoirwin.com, you can find all of her books. And you've got the Wave Riders,
yep,
which is the one you were talking about with adrenaline and all of that.
Creativity and balance and accepting diverse thinking. It's got a lot in there about accepting, if I can jump in here on a totally different subject, almost, is that, you know, we're so globally competitive right now that we need creative thinkers, and we need to know how to work with highly creative people. And I'm not talking necessarily here art and music and everything. I'm talking about people who get new ideas, make innovation, so that the companies can compete with other companies around the world. And things change so fast that right now that's a high commodity, right? If you can think of new ideas, that's a high commodity. But if you're thrown into a corporation that that has your adrenaline going so long, so hard, that they don't also teach the balance of the different thinkers, right? Then you could burn out. So accepting that there are diverse thinkers that need to have freedom in a different way. You know, we might work a 10-hour day and produce at 150%, but maybe we need a day off afterwards. That doesn't fit into the 9-to-5 week work week, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, the whole work week idea, and people go in and they sit there for 8 hours, and a lot of them maybe get an actual, maybe an hour or two of real work done. And the rest of the time, their minds are just not focused.
Yeah, they're blurry, fuzzy, or, you know, right after lunch, that little carpet you get where you're really not even in the room anymore.
Yeah, and for people who work a lot and then they get home and on their days off, they need time to recharge, so they don't clean their house. And then that's on their brain. So it's like such, it's all interconnected.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's companies now that hire particular children in the, or adults, I should say, in the autism spectrum, let's say, because they work better at finding bugs in software. You know, you don't find them much around the water cooler chatting, but they definitely will find the bugs in software better. You know, they're not hiring them because they have a disability quotient. They're hiring them because they're better at it. Mm-hmm. And so that's this whole thing about recognizing and honoring, you know, diverse thinkers and just diverse people in so many ways.
Mm, I love that. Well, Patricia, it's time for a break. So this is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. And right now we're speaking with Patricia Indigo Irwin. You can find her at patriciaindigoirwin.com. And she is an author, a speaker, and a coach. She does life coaching, success coaching, all sorts of different kind of coaching. And she's also author of the book we were discussing earlier, The Wave Riders, and also Teach Me to Breathe, which you can find at teachmetobreathe.com. So we'll be back with more synchronicity and more discussion with Patricia in just a moment.
The July issue of Discorder is here. Be sure to pick up a copy around town or check it out online at discorder.ca and catch features on Pat Locke, Dirty Spells, Horses Records, The Beelines, and so much more. Also be sure to peep the Discorder playlist, now available through SoundCloud. And a very special thank you to this issue's advertisers, Audiopile Records, CCEC Credit Union, Catalano Street Party, LiveVan.com, the Ponderosa Festival, the Queer Arts Festival, the Rickshaw Theater, Rifflandia, the Media Club, Vancouver Fetish Weekend, Vancouver Fringe Festival, Vancouver Queer Film Festival, the Victory Square Block Party, and Vinyl Records.
The Vancouver Queer Film Festival is back for its 26th year in theaters August 14 to 24. More than 80 films from 11 countries, including Russia, Brazil, Italy, and the Philippines, showcase themes of gender identity, forbidden love, and culture. Super Pass is available now and tickets on sale July 24. For tickets and more info, check out queerfilmfestival.ca. Support the festival. Donate $10 by texting GIVER10, spelled GIVER10, to 45678.
Has mental illness or addiction touched your life? You might be interested in coming out to the Kaleidoscope, UBC's first and only student-created, peer-run mental health support group at the university's Vancouver campus. They offer a stigma-free place for people to share their stories with others going through similar experiences. The Kaleidoscope meets every week on Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. at the Center for Student Involvement in Brock Hall.
Learn more at the-kaleidoscope.com.
This week on the Arts Report, film, theater, dance, books, visual art, and more. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m., the Arts Reporters explore what's fun, fascinating, campy, or critical in the Vancouver art scene. You can find bonus content on our Mixcloud, Facebook, and Twitter. Got an idea for a review, interview, or original production? Email arts@citr.ca. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or anytime on citr.ca.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking today with Patricia Indigo Irwin, and she is a coach, an author, a speaker. We're talking about NLP, we're talking about different ways of thinking and creating and Patricia is just a wealth of information. I'm so excited to have you back on the show. Thanks.
Thank you. It's great to be here, as always.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit more about NLP, because you were talking about the visual, auditory, kinesthetic, olfactory, and gustatory ways of sensing and experiencing the world. But what about the linguistic part of it, the language?
So often, Milton Erickson, who was just a fabulous hypnotherapist and psychiatrist, healer, wonderful person that a lot of the NLP and the coaching was based on his works, who he was paralyzed at a very young age. And so he watched people. And what he watched and observed was that often what we say is not really what we mean. And so we can pick up on our languaging and make discoveries, you know, old habit patterns that are still existing and create new ones by even just changing our language system.
Mm. So can we have a few more examples? You gave us one example earlier on in the hour, but how, because I really feel like, and I think so many people who deal with depression and trauma and all of that, we really have these hardwired negative thought patterns. And no matter how much therapy we have and how much we read, we go into this default thought pattern. And stopping ourselves is really a challenge because once, I mean, it's so hardwired. It's like when you're walking in a path in the woods, if there's a clear path there, you're much more likely to take it than the one where you have to like beat down the bushes with a machete or something. So how can you give us some examples of the kind of languaging that we might use to change some of these thought patterns?
I've got, you know, about 500 thoughts going through my mind at the same time to answer this. But some of the things, let's see, the one that hit me here, too, is the repeating, you know, depression that we fall into, like an old recording that just keeps playing back and back in our minds. I want to just throw out a theory that I have, too, that you know, the creative thinkers we were talking about before, what happens, too, is when we ride adrenaline a lot, we can repeatedly fall into the depression habit because of we just burn up a lot of, you know, this is sort of my take on it. We burn up a lot of our adrenaline, and so we actually don't have the capacity to be that adrenalized person that we thought was so great, and so we fall into this depression pattern. So recognizing that pattern and stopping ourselves from utilizing so much adrenaline in a balanced way can actually prevent, I believe, the falling into the deeper depths of the depression as well. So that's number one that popped into my mind is, you know, for us to really observe our patterns, our wave patterns there. The second one is the languaging patterns. You know, of course, one of the things is, for example, we talk about, you know, to our children, for example, you know, don't spill that milk. You know, our highways department say, don't drive on the highway. But the reality of that is that we don't hear the word don't. We just hear spill the milk. Drive on the, or don't drive on the highway, don't drive on the shoulders. Drive on the shoulders, right? So when we're thinking about things in our depressed state, now in a depressed state, it's very hard to see anything that's positive or light. So we have to sort of be okay with walking up little steps, right? Baby steps, and sort of if you're in this pit, somebody throws in a ladder, you're walking up little baby steps, right? So we're focused on what I don't want, you know? I don't want to be like this anymore. I don't want to be depressed. I don't want to be sad, you know. I don't want to be miserable. I don't want to be fat. I don't want to be lazy. I don't want to be whatever it is that you're put yourself down saying is, right? And if we can start by even changing that languaging from what we don't want to what we do want in our life and changing it to say, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe even having setting up an automatic system within ourselves. When I hear myself say, you know, I don't want to be lazy anymore, to leave that focus and turn around and say, okay, to myself, what is it that I do want to do? What is it that I do want to be? What is it that I do want to have? And so if I turn now and I say, okay, what is it I want to have? Well, I want to be energetic. How might I create that? Now, understanding that in depression, if you're fully in depression and you've used up all your serotonin and you're in exhaustion and burnout, you know, that energized state might not come too fast. But as soon as you start to turn your mind and your languaging into the more creation possibilities mind, then what happens is you start to step one step out and it adds up, accumulates into a day where all of a sudden there you are, happy and energized. Now, the other part of that is, you know, we have our three brain systems. So we have our reptilian brain, which is ancient. It was the first brain, right? So it was, you know, it's the brain that if you put your hand on the stove, instantaneously you're going to remove that hand. You're not going to think at all. Then we have our limbic system, which is our emotional brain, and it's really tied to, you know, do I belong here? Am I okay with the family group? It's tied into our emotions. And then we have our thinking possibilities brain, our cerebral cortex, which is really, really a newer brain. And it has billions and billions of neurons that can and connections that can take us into possibilities thinking. However, if we are all of a sudden thrown in, and, you know, the reptilian brain and the limbic brain, well, they're like BFFs, right? So they're like buddies. They've been there for years. And the thinking brain's just really trying to get in there. And our languaging is not even very old either. So if we get thrown in by just a simple tone in someone's voice into our reptilian brain, or maybe it's our own brain saying to us, you're no good. You can't do this. Others can, but you can't, right? Stay here. Don't upset the apple cart. Just you know, don't make any change. So we can be in that reptilian brain, not able to think about possibilities. So as soon as we step away from what I don't want and what I'm focusing on, the negative parts that are in my life, and we turn around to possibilities, we can turn around and say, okay, what is it that I'm willing to, what is one small thing that I'm willing to do today to help me climb out of this hole? What is one small thing I can do each and every day to help me not fall into this hole next time? What is one thing I can do to really nurture myself? You know, when you're in the low of depression, that's not the time really for making plans. You know, making plans of what's the next job you want, is you're really only seeing one side, if you're seeing the negative side. So if you were to just now realize that in that state, what you want is to nurture yourself. So what can I do for myself that I know is something that I used to enjoy or something that will nurture my mind or body? Okay, so that's one way of changing our languaging into, instead of what I don't want, into what do I want?
Thank you, Patricia. That brings up a question, because I know that you had a really difficult childhood. I believe it was bipolar that your mother suffered from.
Yes.
Yes. And you had very, very struggled poverty, and I think you were out on your own at an extremely young age.
13.
13. And that's if I was 15, but yeah. I mean, 13, I can't even imagine. So can you tell me what was maybe, if you can recall this, what was one of the first things that you were able to do to really actively turn your situation around?
Well, you know, one thing was being willing to try and fall and make mistakes, right? Just testing the waters in a lot of different things. You know, not having to know exactly where I was going next. I didn't have really the luxury of doing that. I had the luxury of, you know, okay, I can get 2 days here, working 3 days here. So I tried and tested a lot of different things to help me survive, because, you know, some of the things you have to do first is survive. And then, you know, I really woke up one day when I was, assuming when my daughter was about, I can't even remember, but maybe 8 years old, and she was in an organization called the Trumpet Band, and there were so many fantastic people there. There were, and my mother was actually, even though she was bipolar, she was fantastic. She was intelligent. She was funny. There were so many great things, but totally misunderstood, right? So one day I was at you know, in the trumpet band, and we were, the kids were practicing, and people were coming up to me and saying, you know what, I'm on medication for depression, I'm on medication for depression, oh, I'm bipolar, oh, I'm on medication for depression. And I thought to myself, oh my God, there's either, you know, this highly infectious disease going around called depression and bipolar, or something else is going on here. So then I started to observe that the people who were telling me this were also people who I regarded as very intelligent, funny, loving, working in their community, doing all sorts of great things. And I also noticed, and they're also working in their community, looking after 7 children, volunteering here, volunteering there, doing, you know, and I could see that they were riding this adrenaline high, even though nobody was noticing it. So nobody noticed that part until they fell into depression. When they fell into depression, they go to the doctor, they're called depressed, right? And sometimes they don't even know that they were actually high on adrenaline for a long time. So I really noticed that pattern. When I noticed that, I was able to turn around, which I would have believed would have been a complete following in my mother's path, because I found myself riding adrenaline. I found myself falling into depression. And so I was able, through the skills of breathing, which brings in the parasympathetic nervous system to battle that adrenaline fight or flight that we get, sort of, because it's not always about the tiger, right? Fight or flight can be the morning alarm going off, and we've got a project to work on. And so we kick in that fight or flight response, and we're using it all the time now. And no wonder we're getting that burnout, no wonder depression is increasing, and no wonder, you know, bipolar is increasing, because people drop to the bottom, they sit there, they wait till they can get re-energized with adrenaline again. And instead of hovering around the middle where really great creative production can happen, they want to head straight back to the high of adrenaline.
Well, that's because that the high of I was actually reading online, and there's a new in the next DSM, I guess it'll be 6, I don't know, there's a new bipolar type 2, which is basically what you're talking about. It's the depression and hypomania. So it's not the manic where you're putting yourself in dangerous situations or having risky sex and things like that. it's that high peak performance place where you're running on adrenaline. You're not making dangerous decisions, but it's that high energy, and then you drop down to depression because you burn yourself out. And it sounds like that's almost what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I hypothesize, I can't even say it. My theory, let's go with that one. My theory here too is that it's a line, right? There's a spectrum line, and that you can. So the really highest level of bipolar is, like you're saying, doing dangerous things, right? But it's not an on or off situation. You're not like either at that high level. Many of us can be at a slightly lower level than that, still having the ups and downs, but still producing great works and not really noticing that we have this pattern, right? So bipolar simply means two poles. And I think that if you know, when we're young, we can handle that really high of, hyper-productivity, and then, you know, we don't drop maybe so low, but, you know, I believe, too, we get a bit of a sensitivity to it as our adrenals start to burn out a little bit. We can start to move higher and higher and higher on that wave until our waves are much higher, and we get shaky almost, and we fall into the deepest depths. So I also believe that when we learn to balance it more, we can prevent us from going and moving forward into the highs of severe mental illness.
And this that brings up a thought for me. Alison Armstrong, actually, and I think there's someone else who teaches women about adrenal burnout. It's really a problem for high-producing women. Because like you said, when you're younger, you can produce more. But this testosterone and adrenaline state, especially on women's bodies, is so much harder. And then we burn out so quickly, like as we get into our 30s and 40s and 50s, our adrenal glands start to burn out because we've been constantly, and I'm sure it happens for men as well, but much more so for women, because it just strains all of our organs so much more.
And we move from superwoman to a woman worth nothing at all,
mm-hmm.
in our minds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, so for years I've been, you know, that's what the Wave Riders was first about, was just, you know, I was pleading for people to see this to see this lower line as a prevention, you know, in the way that, you know, the other part is too, is that the high of adrenaline, when we're producing on the high of adrenaline, we're very optimistic. So technically, if I was a manager of a company that was creating new things, and I had somebody walk into my office that was high on adrenaline, and I could sense it or tell it, and they were talking fast, and they were, you know, seeing all the optimism, I would myself, as a manager, take a break, allow that person to spew out the creativity, right? And then I would say, okay, that's awesome. Now, what I want you to do is to go take a break, and, you know, even for a day or so, and let this roll around and come back to me now and show me the other parts of this, right? Because it's not always about optimism. There is going to be. So there's value in the higher and lower waves, right? The higher one gives us creativity, optimism, ideas. This is all possible. And depression gives us what it's not, right? And there's a line. It's not like we don't have to drop into the lowest depression, but when we come off the, you know, a higher adrenaline wave, we head into a moment that's slightly below middle, and we can now look at the artwork even we created and see the things, the finer details that need to be improved. So there's actual bonus and benefit as long as we don't go too far on either side.
So it sounds like what you're saying is to kind of keep it closer to that middle. Well, you were talking about balance.
Exactly. Like, you know, going on the radio show with you gives me a jolt of adrenaline. Not massive, major, but enough that my body's working, right? My creativity's working. My mind is up and, you know, I'm thinking faster. You know, I'm not talking faster because I'm purposely slowing myself down, you know, normally I would be talking really fast, right, and gasping, you know, for breath between each sentence. So that's a sign for me that, okay, I'm on adrenaline right now. So if I take a few deep breaths, that'll bring it down a little bit. So if I don't allow myself to go without oxygen, because wouldn't that be nice? We need oxygen, right? Mm-hmm. So if I allow myself to stop periodically and just breathe, that brings my adrenaline. I think you heard the shift change right there. Brings my adrenaline down a little bit, so I'm not going to burn out as bad as I would have if I kept going. Now, the other sense to that is because I know right now this is a charged moment for me, then when we're finished, I'll make sure I have a balanced, restful moment. Mm. You see? Rather than keep going.
Yeah, because that's the instinct is like, oh, I've got this high now. I've got to get so much done because stuff needs to get done.
I know. And then that goes into even more, right? Well, I did so much today. I can just go and now, you know, pick up the groceries too, right? And next thing you know, that high, positive, high adrenaline state has turned into anger or something, right? Because now you're fighting the burnout as it's coming in. I'm talking about not permanent burnout, but daily, you know, this is this week's, today's burnout, right? You did this adrenaline, you run that adrenaline high. Now you're starting to go lower in energy, and so you're battling to get back in. So anger is an adrenaline boost, right? So you snap at your family, gives you another boost to get it up, and if they make any comments that you need to take a break, well, that's going to boost your adrenaline again with anger. And so we do that, and then what happens is we do hit where we're tired, right? And so now we're so tired that we just don't feel good. We don't feel, you know, we can ruin vacations this way. If we've been up on adrenaline for a year and we go on vacation, for some reason we just don't enjoy it. Because you know why? We've got no more enjoyment juices with us.
Mm, interesting. That I never really looked at it that way, because I feel like with vacation, I just want it to be right. Like I never seem to be able to get that feeling that I'm looking for.
So I invite you next time to make sure that you've had, you know, a balanced time before that. Now, what I've observed just through people I've worked with, right, is that, you know, if we're highly adrenalized for a week, we might be in the lower states for 2 weeks. If we're highly adrenalized for a year, we could be 2 years in that lower state. That's pretty deadly, eh?
Wow.
Yeah. So often I find that I just, you know, adrenalize so I can get everything done before I go on vacation, work twice as hard so I have lots of money to do it, and then I hop on there and, you know, went on a vacation to Mexico, and all of a sudden I went, wow, I don't feel anything here, right?
I find that I notice, and I think it's partly like changing your your routine can boost your energy, right?
Yeah.
Which is part of the great thing about travel is that it gives you these new perspectives. And so I find that I, even though it's not quite the feeling that I'm looking for, when I am somewhere else, I do get a sense of the adrenaline and the creativity and all of that. And then when I come back and I try to get back into my routine, I sink really low.
Mm. And, you know, it'd be interesting to ask yourself right at that moment, right? You know, why, not just why are you sinking low, you know, what are you noticing now that that's making that change in you, and what do you want to change that to? And it might be a routine change, right? So this is like a powerful message. I've wanted, you know, to get out to people for so many years that there's this lower level, even if we don't call it anything about medical disorder, there is this lower level where we ride these waves, you know, everyday people. And maybe it's a very low spectrum, you know, so it's barely going up and barely going down. But there's from there all the way to huge waves up and down. And for us to notice our own waves, our own awareness around it, and then we have the power to create the patterns that we want to regularly depend on in our life. And that's an amazing progress. And I want to still answer one more of your questions because you wanted another example about NLP.
Okay, awesome.
So rather than the languaging one, I'm going to share with you one that I think is kind of funny. So there could be an event that happened in our lives which was, you know, quite traumatic, let's say. And, you know, NLP and coaching, we don't work with the heavy traumas, really. But we can do things like an event that happened that now we're scared to do something or you know, we want to quit smoking or you know, all sorts of things like that. But, like, for example, I have one where I was working as a ski patroller in Vancouver at Grouse Mountain. And I had to climb up to for training up top on the bull wheel where the chairs go around. And I had my ski boots on, and I slipped, and I fell backwards. It's about 11 feet onto cement.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was caught, luckily. an electrician caught me mid-slip, right? So I was saved. But the trauma of the event had made its own little pathway into my mind so that the next time I had to go up into one of those, I actually literally froze. I couldn't move. So one of the techniques NLP does for that is actually to see the movie and then run the movie backwards. And so, and you know, I'm not giving you the full technique, you know, there's just not enough time, right? But, you know, for example, you might sit in this movie theater and you'd see the scene up on the screen. And here you see yourself going through the process. And at some point we would suggest that you roll it backwards, right? Making any sort of cartoon sounds that you want on the way back. And then you might even sit in a chair that's further back and then do the same thing. And you might even go in the theater all the way back to where the projectionist is. I don't even know if we have projectionists anymore. But way, way back up, you know, where they play it comes out of where that room used to be. And view it there and run it backwards and, you know, make funny sounds or, you know, and all of a sudden you start laughing at the scene. And it can, you know, for some people, it's instantaneous change. For others, they might have to do that a few times. But it actually is changing the way that the brain is relating to that event. Isn't that amazing?
Mm. But see, and then I would think, oh, but the visualizing, because I've tried that technique before, mm-hmm. and I get stumped with the whole visualizing.
And what you might need to do even is to work, you know, a couple things happen that I worked with people who felt they couldn't visualize at all. And what happens a lot of times is there's a period of time where a person needs to be in full relaxation and trust. And you can't force that, right? You can't force that. It may take 10 sessions. It might take 15 sessions. And then all of a sudden a little window opens up. And something starts to move, and then you know, I've heard people say, "Wow, you know what? I just did it." You know, I had a, you know, they sometimes you feel that little bit of pressure to perform, right? I have to see this. I have to be able to see this event, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, Patricia, it's almost time to wrap up the show. So your website again is Patricia indigoerwin.com. And if people want to get in touch with you, if they want to read your books or get some coaching, is that the best way to get in touch?
It is, and phoning or emailing is always good. So let me just see. Yep, my test from that page came through, and, you know, I'm just looking here at on that page, too, and there's one little bit if I could leave everybody with, if we have time, do we?
Sure.
I noticed on my own website, I haven't looked at it for a while, I noticed that at that Deepak Chopra quote that says, "What we notice is not the same as what we know." And I think that is the power of coaching and NLP and all of these techniques, is that we can help people, support people to dig deeper into their own knowing and discover their own answers, solutions, and possibilities to what will work for them, rather than being told, this is what you need to do to improve or to help or to heal, to be able to search within their own mind, you know, knowing that we consciously know about 4 ±1 things, yet our brain is absolutely observing and filtering and filing information that goes around us all the time. Billions of bits of information. And the brain then only feeds to us, in our mind, what it believes is real and important to us. And we can change what it feeds to us by changing and letting our brain know what it is we want. And, you know, being able to have that quiet moment to dig deeper. So I hope everybody gets a chance to try it sometime.
Thank you so much, Patricia. So again, your website is patriciaindigoerwin.com, and the phone number I'll put, is it okay if I put
that
out
there? Absolutely.
Okay, it's 250-558-5714. Again, patriciaindigoerwin.com. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And just let everybody know I'm often on the phone, so please do leave a message with who you are and what it is you're talking about, and I'll call you back.
Okay, thanks, Patricia. Have a great
you.
Day. Take care. All right. Well, again, that was Patricia Indigo Erwin, and this has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and coming up in just a moment or two is Parts Unknown with the fabulous DJ Chris-erific.
Fabulous.
Fabulous. Fabulous. And he's always got a good show for you, so stick around for that. And I want to send you lots of love. Be well. Namaste.
I call it transcendence. Transcendence. I call it transcendence.
Psytrance, hard trance, epic trance, acid trance, deep trance, hard dance, breakbeat. Every Sunday at 10 p.m. to midnight. Hosted by DJ Smiley Mike and DJ Caddyshack.